the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, Healthy Living in the Wasatch. I'm Lynn Ware Peak, and this morning, Mary Beth Maziarz and I explore how AI meets fitness and recovery with Connor Darmbrough, the co-founder of the Smart Fit Method here in Park City. Connor will break down the science of personalized data-driven training, and then Medicare. Open enrollment begins October 15th, but nearly 70% of beneficiaries don't understand the process. Health tech expert Stephanie Jones shares what we all need to know. That coming up this hour on The Mountain Life. This morning, we talk about efficient, effective, expert-led fitness with Connor Darmbrough, former pro athlete and co-founder of the Smart Fit Method with a new location here in Park City.
Every Smart Fit fitness session blends strength, cardio, and oxygen training into 20-minute high-impact workouts. Delivered in a semi-personal training format, the Concierge Fitness Program is powered by intelligent machines developed by NASA and top performance labs and personalized by our expert trainers.
Sessions are built to stack, providing structure, flexibility, and measurable progress across strength, performance, and recovery. Connor Darmbrough, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you for having me.
Connor, we appreciate you giving us a great tour a couple of days ago, and you've got a grand opening coming up on October 22nd. Can you kick it off by telling us when you opened and what the grand opening is?
Yeah, so we opened our studio out here in Park City just about a couple months ago. This was our seventh location. So we've kind of learned a lot along the way since starting the company 4 years ago. And really with the Park City location, we wanted to, you know, add on to what we've previously done, which is kind of what you guys were explaining there, which is combining the exercise, the recovery, the testing all together into one space. So it's kind of an upgraded location. And yeah, we've been open, soft open for kind of friends and family for a couple months now. And then on October 22nd, our grand opening.
Well, I find it to be really interesting because I have always been, like many people, into fitness and living this active lifestyle in Park City, you know, running and biking and skiing. But a lot of people get to a point in their lives where they realize, you know, I'm just not very scientific about the way I go about this. And wouldn't it be nice not to hack anything, not to have a get fit quick scheme, but to do it more efficiently and with more data? And that's kind of what you're based on, right?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head there. You know, we really stick to the foundations of exercise and recovery, and we look at how we utilize technology and more efficient ways of training to get better results in a shorter period of time. So you're right there. We're not trying to really hack anything or shortcut anything. It's how do we take what a person needs and then give them an efficient amount of stimulus to get that response. So yeah, it's really just, you know, 20, 30 minute workouts followed by usually 15 minute recovery sessions. And everything that you do when you come into the studio is tailored to you.
What kinds of things would somebody see on their first time to Smart Fit that they might not have seen in other places?
Yeah, I mean, if you've never been to, you know, we'll call it like a smart studio before, where they have some of the technology that we have, you've just been to a regular gym, when you walk in, it's going to look pretty foreign. A lot of the equipment is not seen at your regular gym. It's mostly in professional sports teams or high-grade medical facilities. So when you come in, you're probably going to see a bunch of advanced robotic-looking machines that you haven't seen before. But really, it is still the same foundations of exercise. It's just using technology to kind of improve them. And then the other thing you'll see when you come in is a couple of trainers who will be there to greet you and explain everything that we do and show you how we can, you know, most benefit you with what your goals are. And then, Lynn, you said something there earlier too, where it's like, Park City is a super active community. A lot of people are mountain biking, skiing, and get a lot of outdoor exercise. And my goal always with Smart Fit has been, how do we not make the gym their life, but how do we have the gym empower their life? So really with SmartFit, what we look at is, yeah, if you're a super active skier or mountain biker or whatever, how do we utilize the equipment in there to make you more resistant to injury, to have you perform better at doing the things you love, and then get you in and out within, you know, 40 minutes so that you're not spending your whole week in the gym, but you're actually going and doing the things you love outside.
Yeah, that makes sense, because you do see those people who, I don't know if they just have a room at the gym or what, but they're there every time you go. And so, and they don't really ever look like they're that different or really improving that much. So what kind of things are you finding? It seems like you're doing some cutting edge things there. What kind of things are you doing that somebody who isn't willing to work hard and just do it on their own able to accomplish without these tools?
Yeah, I mean, really, I think what we do is we measure the catabolic and anabolic phase. So what that means is we measure how much exercise you need, stimulus on the muscle, the cardiovascular system, and then how much recovery you need for that stimulus to actually take effect. So someone could go into the gym every single day for 2 hours and be getting a ton of stimulus, but not necessarily be getting enough recovery for that to take effect on their body. And that can lead to plateaus, it can lead to injury, it can lead to health problems. So what we really look at is, okay, where's that person at? How much time do they need? You know, a professional athlete might need an hour, 2 hours a day, whereas someone who hasn't exercised in 10 years, realistically, within an hour a week, I could get that person really good results. So I think that it really comes down to figuring out where you're at. And the way we do that is through a series of tests. So we look at people's VO2 max, we look at all their metabolic factors, their body composition, their strength, their mobility, their balance. When we identify that, then we build that program out for them based on the time they really need. And when it comes to trying to do things outside, I mean, you know, at a regular gym or whatever it may be, I find that a lot of people don't necessarily know how much is enough, right? They either underload their body or they way overload it. And what you'll find at SmartFit is that we give you the right amount, the right dosage. It's kind of like medicine. Like, there's a dose and a frequency that you need, and depending on what you need it for, you need a certain amount. And a lot of times people go to the gym and they're maybe taking someone else's medicine, right? A different dosage, a different frequency than what they actually really need for themselves. Like, you wouldn't go into my medicine cabinet and grab, you know, whatever I'm taking, because you probably have a different set of circumstances. And a lot of regular workout programs are kind of a one size fits all, and they don't really look at that exercise dosage or frequency or the amount of recovery they need.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with Connor Darmbrough. He is the founder of SmartFit Method, a new location, I believe the 7th, here at Kimball Junction. And it's right next to the Taco Bell. I hate to, you know, involve fast food with talking about fitness and health, but it's people know where it is. And on the end of the building that's facing Walmart. So there you go. That explains it. Connor, I wanted to ask you how a 20-minute workout and then recovery after that, so it ends up being about 45 minutes, how does that play into endurance, if it does?
Yeah, that's a good question. So there's a couple things there. So the first thing is that it is most of the workouts are 20 or 30 minutes, and they're pretty short. They are high intensity, low impact, but really it's looking at, okay, what are the, during that workout, what are the ways that we can increase the stimulus? So there's a lot of ways you can do that. You can increase the amount of time the body's under tension, where in a 20-minute workout, you could be having something similar to what you'd typically do in an hour. There's things like what you guys tried when you came in, which is the Vasper machine, where it compresses the muscles, creates blood flow restriction, which improves someone's ability to fight off fatigue for longer. And that in 20 minutes is actually a similar amount of fatigue that most people have in 2.5 hours. The machines themselves, by putting the body under time under tension, using things like blood flow restriction, improving your VO2 max, it will naturally increase endurance. If it's an endurance athlete, I approach it a slightly different way. General individual, it's going to increase endurance. But if it's an endurance athlete where they need to be able to train, you know, and go for 6 hours at a time, I look at what I can do in those sessions to improve where they hit fatigue in four 5-6 hours. So if I can improve their lactate threshold, even though they're not training for 6 hours, they're probably more likely to hit fatigue later on in their sessions. And then the other thing we look at, of course, is recovery and then appropriate recommendations. So recovery being, you know, if someone's trying to improve endurance, you've got to let the body recover after a long session. So we have a lot of modalities to help with that. And then the other thing we do is when we look at our testing, we look at, you know, are they training appropriately outside of the studio as well? If the person's an endurance athlete, are they in the right heart rate zones? What's their fueling look like? Carbs to fats, you know, what types, dextrose, fructose, all those things. So we do a lot of assessments on that as well.
Yeah, wow. You know, we talk a lot on this show about precision medicine, and AI plays a really big part in that, allowing us to just really focus on in on the needs. And now this idea of precision fitness, I would imagine, and you as a former pro skier and a, you know, pro athlete, you're for very much of your life, I bet you've seen a lot of inefficiencies in the way that we go about mm-hmm. getting fit. What do you think we fall short on mostly?
I mean, I've done most of those inefficiencies. Like I've learned from my own mistakes too. And I think that it really comes down to like, there's 8% of the population, give or take, that really do hit the right amount of exercise. The CDC says it's about 20%, but when you kind of look at the average population and are they actually every single week hitting that, it's probably around 8%. And I think that for most people, I'll go to the 8% after, but for those 92%, for most of those people, they start off too hard, too fast. So I think that people, you know, they start a new program, it's New Year's or whatever, and they go in super hard into the gym. They go really hard for 2 weeks. They're not factoring in that their nervous system is becoming taxed. They're probably not recovering enough. It's a huge shock to the body. And then when that fatigue starts to catch up, they start to fade out of the gym and you don't see them again. So I think it's, for the majority of the population, it's slowing it down at the start and setting a consistent routine. People always overestimate what they can do in a few months, and they always seem to underestimate what they could do in a few years. And I think that just slowing it down and setting yourself on a consistent program for a long period of time, that takes care for most people. Myself, a lot of the mistakes I've made, and maybe some of the listeners have made these mistakes too, but just overtraining. I mean, there's this kind of thought in the, whether you're an athlete or you're really into fitness, that more is always better. And it's sometimes just easier to keep adding and adding and adding to what you're doing rather than looking at the inefficiencies and what you can take out. People typically, you know, you want a balanced program. So you want something that improves your VO2 max, your aerobic capacity. Most people, that's 1 to 2 sessions a week, right? Where you can do a hard interval session and really improve your VO2 max, which is huge for your cardiovascular system. Most people, they train, so when they do their long sessions, we were talking about endurance earlier, they typically train in the wrong heart rate zones. Most of the time you want to be in zone 2 where your body's burning fat. And the best way to do that is to use a wearable or take a VO2 max assessment where you can actually figure out where your heart rate zones are. And then make sure you're training the majority of those longer sessions in zone 2. That's a mistake I used to make a lot, where I would do these multi-hour sessions, but I'd be in zone 3, zone 4 quite often. Happens a lot in mountain biking specifically because of hills. And then, so training longer in zone 2. The other thing I see is a lot of people work out really hard, but they don't take care of their mobility. They don't utilize an AM or PM mobility routine. And I think that that's extremely important. If you lose mobility, it's going to be really hard to avoid injury. And then strength training. I mean, people either strength train way too much if they're strength-based, or they completely ignore it, which a lot of endurance athletes do. So I think it's just making sure you're hitting those 4 pillars equally and, you know, not overtraining. And then for people who are getting into it, just setting up, you know, 2-3 times a week to start, consistent program, and make sure that you double down on recovery.
I was just going to ask about recovery because it seemed like when we came in for a visit that the recovery was a really critical part of your approach and that you had some unique tools and some familiar tools for recovery. Could you share a little bit about those?
Yeah, for sure. So in the Park City and Salt Lake City locations, we have four main recovery devices. We have one, it's called a Lumati 5-in-1. That's what you guys tried. And that's really an advanced red light therapy machine that also utilizes hydrogen therapy, a micro impact plate for your lymphatic system. And then it also has a vagus nerve stimulator. And really what that machine's designed to do is speed up your process of recovery by putting you into a parasympathetic, which is a relaxed state after you work out. When you work out, your body goes to fight or flight, sympathetic. And the quicker you can drop out of that state, the faster your recovery will kickstart after the session. So that's one of the machines that we use. We also have hot and cold therapy, right? So contrast therapy, sauna, four different cold plunges at different temperatures. And we have different protocols on that depending on who's coming in and what they're stacking it with, right? Whether it's strength training or cardiovascular workout. Sauna has a ton of benefits. There's a multitude of studies of how it improves circulation, reduces blood pressure, improves your cardiovascular health. So it's definitely a staple on the recovery side, and then utilizing it correctly as well. And then same with the cold plunges. I mean, cold plunges have been around for forever, but in the last few years, it's definitely a lot more research has gone into it in terms of what cold exposure can do for the body, in terms of improving your metabolism, tapping into brown fat, reducing inflammation in the body. But the big thing with cold plunges is just making sure that you're doing it at the right temperature and the right frequency. Because kind of what I mentioned with medicine there, it's the recovery stuff, it's the same in terms of dosage and frequency. The most common example is females should typically be at 55 degrees Fahrenheit or above, whereas males can tolerate more of a 35 to 45 degrees Fahrenheit and get similar benefits. So those are some of the recovery devices we have, as well as a biocharger, which is good for cellular health. And then the workouts themselves also have some kind of recovery tied into it, whether it's the compression or we are utilizing the oxygen when we're training with people. While it's a workout, you're still getting a lot of recovery benefits as well. So it's a staple. I always tell people when they start our program to double down on recovery, because that's usually the main mistake I see is people will work out, you know, consistently, but they'll neglect their recovery, and that can dramatically affect your results. It's the same as everyone knows this, but you know, if you can't outwork a bad diet, you got to focus on your food, you got to make sure you're sleeping, got to focus on your recovery. And that's really what allows for all the things that you're doing when you're putting the work in with your exercise routine to take effect.
You had a really complex and very comprehensive report that is generated when people come in, right? To kind of check all these different areas of strength and cardiovascular and nutrition. It's so many things. What do you find people are most surprised by after they get this evaluation that they didn't expect about their health?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, like you mentioned, a holistic report. We look at all the factors regarding nutrition, recovery, exercise metrics. I think what most people are surprised about is there's usually something neglected, and that's okay. Like, it's really hard to hit every single thing. But the thing I usually see surprise people is VO2 max. So that's, to just clarify what that is, that's your body's ability to pull oxygen in. And in terms of an exercise metric, it's the most significant for reducing mortality risk. So if you have a high VO2 max, you have inversely low mortality risk. So that's the one I see surprise people the most. I mean, a lot of people are below average on that because they, unless they're an endurance athlete, they're probably not training it. And that has the biggest, we have a smart score. So we weight all these things together, right? What's your strength? What's your VO2 max? What's your mobility, put all these things together into a smart score. And that's the heaviest weighted section is VO2 max. And that can definitely decrease someone's smart score. So that's the main thing we see surprise people.
Connor, when we came out there, you gave some pretty crazy statistics about how much, especially people over 50, see improvement. And I think you quoted a statistic about strength, was it?
Yeah, so we've been around for 4 years now. So we've done a couple case studies on our members who've, you know, been on the program for a year or longer. And we found that on average, over a year, we had a 70% increase of strength across the big five movements. So that's a leg press or a squat, a row, a bench press or horizontal press, a pull down, and an overhead press. And we hit a 70% improvement over 1 year, which is the average age for that group was 53. That's a significant lift in terms of someone's strength. And that will stay carry with them for multiple years to come. And when you have more strength like that, I mean, your resistance, you have way more resistant to injury. You're more likely to be able to do all the things you want to do for longer. And there's also a pretty big VO2 max increase with that when you improve your strength as well. So it's pretty staggering to see, you know, you have these theories when you start a business of like, oh, if I put all this together and I create a method out of it, you know, I really think I can help people, right? And then when you actually see the measurements come in on a day-to-day basis, it's pretty rewarding.
Yeah. Okay. Grand opening is October 22nd. Give us the details.
Yeah. So we're going to do it should be from 3:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. So you're welcome to come anytime during that. And we're going to have multiple guest speakers from some of the different pieces of equipment we have, as well as some. We'll have, you know, the mayor there. We'll have Live Like Sam over there, which is a nonprofit that we're supporting. We're also going to have a bunch of different vendors kind of in our space. So, you know, different drinks, different food companies that are all kind of in this wellness arena. So it should be a pretty fun event. We're definitely going to have some, you know, discounts, some incentives available. We'll give out some, you know, gift bags to everyone who comes. So it'll should be a pretty cool event to kick things off.
Can you repeat the date and time for the listeners one more time?
Yeah, it's October 22nd, and it's from 3:30 p.m. till 7 p.m.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Well, Connor Darmbrough, what an amazing entrepreneurial effort this is, kind of backing up your experience as a pro athlete and kind of turning it all into this thing to help other people.
Yeah, it came from my experience, you know, competing and skiing and mountain biking and everything. But it also really came from my father and his health circumstances as well. My dad was a professional cyclist for the Canadian national team. And so I was going down a similar path. I was overtraining, had a ton of injuries. And what happened was my dad had this condition. It's called an enlarged aortic valve. And the cardiologist told him, hey, you can't ever walk up a hill again, can't lift over 30 pounds. And that was what traditional medicine was telling him. And, you know, this kind of came out of the blue, right? He was about 50 years old, just came out of nowhere. And all of a sudden, his whole life kind of was turned on its head. And, you know, while a lot of this is stuff I'm very passionate about, the real passion for it came from seeing what this type of equipment did for my father in terms of turning his health around. And that was really what made me want to start this company and help other people with this technology and this approach to exercise. So as much as it's, you know, an endeavor I took, it really stemmed from seeing what happened to my father's health when he started training in a better way.
Wow. That's great. Quick question on that. Is an enlarged aortic valve from overtraining?
Yeah, it is. That's why I was saying I was heading down the same path. So I was doing blood work and I was looking at kind of, you know, my blood pressure and cholesterol and all these different factors. And I was starting to go down a similar road that he was. And yeah, I was 100% just overtraining. He just was, you know, 8 hours a day, 6 to 8 hours a day cycling. So he just over, and also stress from life too, right? You know, you work a lot, you train a lot, all that has an effect on the body. And that's why the recovery is such a big staple, because you don't want to just recover from exercise, but you want to lower the inflammation, the oxidative stress that you're accumulating through day-to-day life. And that is a huge improvement for your health.
Well, Connor Darmbrough, Smart Fit Method, thank you so much for joining us today on the Mountain Life.
Thank you for having me. I hope to see you guys and the listeners for our grand opening. And if for whatever reason you're not able to make it, they're not able to make it, the best way to come check us out is to just book a complimentary session through our website. I'll probably be there. I'll take you through, show you what we do and let you try out some of the equipment.
And that website is?
It's smartfitmethod.com.
Okay, great. Excellent. Connor, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
We've never done a show on Medicare enrollment, but here's the problem. Studies show that up to 70% of beneficiaries don't fully understand the process. With another large portion of Medicare open enrollment starting October 15th, millions of seniors will soon be faced with important choices about their healthcare. Our guest today, Stephanie Jones, is here to change that.
Stephanie is the CEO and founder of a technology platform designed to make Medicare decisions clearer, easier, and more empowering. Inspired by her own mother's struggles with the system, Stephanie built the platform, it's called iTav, on the belief that it takes a village to navigate healthcare. Stephanie joins us now to explain. Stephanie, welcome to The Mountain Life.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. And as Mary Beth said, we've never done a show on Medicare enrollment before. But we do have an aging demographic here in Park City. And I'm told that, you know, you should really even start thinking about this in your late 50s because it takes so long to navigate. What is wrong with that system that it's so hard to navigate?
Well, I'll give you my opinion. It might not be a popular opinion, but I've been in healthcare for 33 years. I started in healthcare with Cigna right out of college. And I have reviewed many, many new regulations over the years. The largest one I reviewed was Part D back in 2005. And it was literally a 4-inch binder of regulations that we had to take and interpret into process and technology to help Part D enrollees enroll in the system. So, you know, my immediate response is that healthcare regulators don't speak plain English. I think that, you know, we all have health insurance or have had health insurance over our lives, and it could be easier. And I think the Part A, B, C, and D is confusing terminology for folks. But I think if we just make it simple, simplify what Part A, B, C, and D actually mean in layman's terms, that's a good starting point.
So you talk about how you went through this process with your mom, and you were, even though you've been in healthcare for over 30 years, you couldn't believe how difficult it was for her to just navigate these waters. Explain what happened to her.
Well, my mom, and, you know, my father as well, they're both still living and they're healthy and thriving. You know, however, they all, you know, they both worked in healthcare. My dad worked for the VA hospital. My mom was a nurse for a doctor's hospital in Miami. And they had employer-sponsored coverage that was very rich benefits. They knew those benefits really well. And then they retired and had to navigate Medicare on their own. They're not college graduates, although, you know, they're very smart people. I think that Medicare in general takes a PhD, to be frank with you. And so with my mom specifically, my mom is suffering from memory loss. She has not been diagnosed with dementia or Alzheimer's or anything, but she does have memory loss. And so it has been very challenging for her to just remember simple things. Even if she reads it, she may go back later and not remember. And so what we found with my mom trying to navigate this on her own, she would call the call center. You know, she'd have her ID card or her benefit package, and she would call them over and over again, asking the same questions. And so my father involved me. He, you know, asked me to get involved and help navigate this. So I actually became her caregiver of sorts for her Medicare benefits. I contacted the health plan. I became her beneficiary, if you will, that could speak on her behalf. And so I really just took over the process.
I hear that needing an advocate like you were being for your mom is such a normal thing these days, which I think is just disgraceful. We should be able to manage basic bills, basic steps of aging without that. What were the first steps that you were able to make? I guess, what was it that made you realize that this was a bigger need for a lot of people?
Well, you know, I've been in healthcare for 3 decades. And the last 15 years, I actually ran a call center for a software and services company. I was the COO there. And so I ran all of the call center and back office operations. And we managed inbound calls for over 50 health plans, Medicare health plans specifically. And in that role, you know, obviously we were taking 3 million calls a year. I listened to calls. I had to be a part of the solution. I had to make sure that my employees were trained and were able to, you know, have those simple conversations with seniors that had varying needs. These were seniors from all over the country, all different demographics, income levels. And so we had to train our employees to be able to engage with people of all backgrounds. And so that's really where it started for me, is just listening to calls and being accountable to my health plan clients and making sure that the quality of service we offered was on par.
Oh, nice. Well, my husband and I are on the like health insurance exchange because we're both self-employed. And boy, is that a process. I hope that maybe you will expand into that. But how does your software, your ITAV, how does that work?
Okay, well, I am building the software, and the software is actually going to be sold to health plans, not to consumers. One of the things that I learned as the COO of this company and managing call centers and back office operations was one of the foundational problems that health plans and government-sponsored plans have in general is they don't have the necessary tools to really forecast the headcount that they need to service the customer. So something as basic as how many people do I need on the phones at any given time isn't something that the industry does well. So when you think about annual enrollment period, which runs only about 7 weeks from October 15th to December 7th, you have 62 million Medicare beneficiaries eligible to re-enroll in coverage. And so just imagine 62 million people over the course of 7 weeks having to navigate the complexity of Medicare. They're all calling their health plan all at the same time. So for the health plan, it's a struggle for them. So I want people to understand that, you know, health plans in general, they also have their own struggles that they're dealing with to navigate this regulatory landscape. And so my software really looks at just the foundational, how do you staff to take on this volume so that when people are calling and when people do need services, you're able to pick up the phone and provide care and access to information. And so something as simple as that, I mean, the hold times during annual enrollment period can be 15, 20, 30, 45 minutes. And then once they actually get someone on the phone, the length of the phone call can be extremely long because the person may need extra assistance. And so we've had calls in my career where the average handle time could be 45 minutes.
You know, I've heard that you really need to start years ahead to be orienting yourself, navigating the waters of receiving Medicare. Why is that? Why do you need to start so early? I know there's Medicare, and then there are these secondary plans that you need to
start. Medigap. Mm-hmm.
What's that world all about?
Well, I'm 55 and I have experience in the space. And I'm already starting. So one example I'll give you, my husband and I, we decided to go ahead and buy a long-term care policy because the reason we thought about that was one of my girlfriends, her mom was experiencing some challenges and she ultimately passed away. But what we learned just through her experience and through other, you know, family members that went through the same thing is Medicare doesn't cover everything. And I think people believe that, you know, I'm on Social Security, I've gotten to this point, Medicare is going to take care of everything. And that is a fallacy. That is not the true sentiment of what Medicare is about. And so as an example for me specifically, we bought a long-term care policy because we know that Medicare does not cover home health care. They do not cover those types of needs when you're not terminally ill or there's some major catastrophic event happening. And so that was one thing that we decided to do as a family.
I guess I'm not really clear on what a long-term care plan is. It's in the case that something befalls you that would require many, many months of...
I mean, so just think about it as a nursing home, for example. You know, so we didn't want our kids to have to deal with nursing home care. So Medicare doesn't cover that. So that was one issue that we learned in our 50s. And so we decided to buy a long-term care policy. So that's going a little bit off topic. But that's just one example, though, of why you need to start early while you're still working, because you need to plan for those financial cash outlays that are going to be inevitable.
Okay, so bringing us back to Medicare, we talked about some long-term plans, but Medicare itself, it's made up of a couple of different components. Can you just give a brief overview of those?
Yeah, sure. So Medicare is made up of four components. There's Part A, B, C, and D. And the way that you actually get those four components, there are two ways. There's Original Medicare, which is really your fee-for-service Original Medicare offered through the government. And then there's your coverage that you can purchase through a private health insurance company. So Part A and B are offered through the government. Part A is your hospitalization, your inpatient care. And Part B is your doctor's visits and your outpatient care, your wellness visits, your labs and screenings. Those are covered under Part B. So it's important to note that Original Medicare, if you go straight through the government, through your Social Security office, they only cover Parts A and B. Part C is really a combination of Part A and B. Part C is offered by private health insurance companies, your United Healthcare, your Aetnas, your Cignas, your Blues plans. Those are the companies that offer Part C. It's really just a combination of A and B. The difference with C, however, is that the Part C plans offer extra benefits not covered by Original Medicare. So things like hearing, vision, dental, supplemental benefits like over-the-counter, food and grocery benefit has been something that's become very popular under the Part C plans. Mm-hmm. The other thing the Original Medicare does not offer is Part D drugs. So if you were to enroll in your Original Medicare plan, you would not get hearing, vision, dental, or prescription drugs.
Okay, just sorry to interrupt you, but this is something I didn't even know. And I'm not of the age that I should start knowing these things. The prescription medications, I mean, that can be thousands of dollars for some people. And so for these people who know, especially if you know before you reach the age of 65 that you've got some long-term conditions and you have some medications, you know you've got to get private insurance. Do you find that a lot of people don't even know that they have to get that C, which is private insurance, to help the parts that A and B don't cover?
So you can also get Part D on a standalone basis. So you could still get Original Medicare with A and B and purchase Part D as a standalone option from a private insurer. So you still have that option to get Original Medicare, but you do have to buy a separate Part D policy if you don't get a Part C. You know, I think people generally know. So Part D became a benefit back in 2006. So it's been around for about 20 years now. And I think there are, you know, people in the industry between insurance brokers, physicians, nurse practitioners and such that have, I believe, really done a good job of educating the market about that. But certainly as you age into Medicare and you get to the point where you're shopping around and educating yourself, that is a huge component. The Part D drug component is a significant outlay of cash if you don't have a drug benefit. And even if you do have a drug benefit, you know, depending on which drugs you're using, the copays could still be pretty significant.
Wow. There's even just when you were describing that in your experience, excellent simplification, it's still confusing. I mean, I just feel so bad for people maybe who aren't the sharpest they've ever been in their lives, who are now at this part of their life where they have to figure these things out, and it's really important to their longevity. But you go over, you said it's important to be prepared because that 7-week period is so tight and so many people are going to be going in there. Can you go over again what you should gather to have ready as far as paperwork or what kind of things you should have in front of you so that you can complete the process effectively?
Yeah, first of all, I think you need to know your budget. You need to know your financials and your budget. You know, what have you planned for, if anything? Have you planned for your, you know, financial allocation on a monthly basis from 65 through 99? So that's, I would say that's the first question. What have you planned for? What can you afford? Because affordability is going to also play into what you decide to purchase for your health insurance package, right? So, you know, the more you can spend, the richer benefits you may decide to purchase. The less you can spend in terms of copays and deductibles and premium, you may end up getting a less rich benefit. But I think it starts with asking yourself the tough question, how much can I really afford? That's number one.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, number two, I would say, list out your drugs. Now, of course, your healthcare is going to evolve over time. You know, you're going to have different ailments that come about that weren't there in the beginning. But I would say start with what you know. So if you have a list of drugs that you're already taking, that is a really critical part because, again, the drug coverage and the drug costs are extremely expensive. So one of the things I always encourage people to do when they're shopping around, whether they're shopping online or if they're calling the different health plans to ask questions, have your list of drugs, know the strength, know whether it's a generic or brand name drug, and actually go through your list of drugs on the phone with them and ask if it's covered. Because sometimes it may be covered in some form or another, but not the same strength that you're taking. So it is important to actually go through the actual list. That is one of the most critical things that people miss because they assume the drug is covered and then they enroll and it's not.
Sure, that makes sense. So if that's one of the biggest mistakes, what's one or two other errors that people have made that you've seen through the years?
Yeah, I would say when selecting a Medicare Advantage plan specifically, oftentimes people don't realize that there's a network involved, right? So in a Medicare Advantage plan, you can't just go to any doctor, any hospital. If you're located in Florida and your network is a Florida-based network, if you travel, you may not have coverage or you may not have a doctor to see in another state. So, you know, knowing those limitations in terms of your physician network, what can you do? Where can you go? Is it an open network? Is it a closed network? Those are very important because especially if you're dealing with certain conditions that you have to see specific specialists, you want to make sure that you have that coverage in the network.
If you're just joining us on The Mountain Life, we're having a conversation with Stephanie Jones. She's the CEO and founder of a platform designed to make Medicare decisions clearer and easier, and it's called ITAV. Did I say that right, Stephanie?
Yes, you did. ITAV.
Okay. What does ITAV stand for?
It stands for It Takes a Village.
Oh, that's really great. So you mentioned a little bit ago, I want to get back to the technology because I know that, well, one of my sons works in healthcare technology and what they're trying to do is, you know, just make the access so much better and just streamline things. And so technology and AI are really helping that effort along. It's one of the real positives that we see coming out of AI. You talked about helping companies learn how they need to staff, for example, these plans, learn how to staff for this enrollment period that's so short. What else does ITAV do?
Well, you know, ITAV is doing some work in the community as well. This, you know, when I started the company, it really was all about people. I've managed operations folks for two decades. And, you know, one of the things that became obvious to me as a leader in the C-suite managing people is that sometimes in healthcare, we get so busy that we forget about the people. And so we don't always look to solve people problems. And so my goal with ITAV is always to solve people problems first, whether it's the frontline employee in the call center that's handling that Medicare beneficiary's call, or whether it's the beneficiary themselves and making sure that they have clear access to care. One of the things that ITAV is doing is we're actively engaging in the community. This past week, we actually hosted a event called Navigating Medicare with about 50 seniors in Miami-Dade County. I'm really just to give a service and to help explain how to navigate Medicare and help them understand some of the challenges that are coming about for 2026. And, you know, most of the participants in this event had already been on Medicare 10 or 20 years. But when I tell you the number of questions that the audience had that I thought were basic questions, they're still not really understanding them. You know, I'll give you an example. The question on the donut hole, that's a whole nother thing that people just don't get. When it comes to prescription drugs, you don't have a flat copay across the year span of time. Your copay could change depending on where you are in the year. And so that was an example of people that have been on Medicare 10 or 20 years just clearly don't get it. And so that's a service that we're providing in the community free of charge. But it is very important to ITAF to hear from the community because it's going to help us build better solutions for the healthcare industry.
Your coverage can change midway through the year. That's so confusing.
Yeah, your out of pocket for prescription drugs could change because of this thing called the donut hole. I mean, we could do a whole nother series on the donut hole.
Oh, that blessed donut hole. I bet people do not love that. But my dad was a doctor. He was an eye doctor. And I mean, he was old school. He came up through the time of paper files and, you know, filing everything by mail. And managed care, he said, was one of the reasons he needed to retire. It was driving him crazy. What do you think is making medicine all over the place so complicated?
Yeah, that's a tough question because, you know, healthcare has just evolved so much. You know, one of the challenges that I think the industry has, not just the physicians, but one, it's complicated. We've acknowledged that. But two, there's so many different systems. And going back to Lynn's question on AI or technology in general, there's so many different platforms that physicians have to use, the healthcare insurance companies have to use, even the beneficiaries have to use. When I think about the number of platforms that we used in healthcare when I was involved, 15 different platforms to the service of Medicare beneficiary. So imagine if you're a physician and your sole purpose is to give care and to treat your patients, and you're navigating the numerous platforms, you're navigating the numerous processes because every health plan is different. So one health plan may have a prior authorization process that looks like this, and another one may have a prior authorization process that looks like that. And so, you know, I think in general it's complicated, but you have the complexity of the technology. It's not streamlined. It's very fragmented. You have the complexity of all of the varied processes across the health plans. And then, of course, you know, I think the doctors themselves are seeing lower reimbursements and, you know, they're seeing more patients, but getting paid less.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. Well, with your experience and your approach that you're working with right now with ITAV, what would you do if you were the queen of everything and could fix the system with a magic wand?
Well, I think that the industry in general is just so competitive. It's such a competitive landscape. Everybody's fighting for the Medicare beneficiary. Medicare beneficiaries are worth a lot to many of these health plans. Now, I know there's some cost pressures that we're experiencing in the industry now, but historically, Medicare was a very good industry or a good space to be in. I think the competitive landscape makes us so competitive that we're not working together. This is an industry problem that we have, the cost pressures, the fragmented technology, the way that our doctors and nurses feel about the industry. It's an industry problem. And so I think if I, you know, had a magic wand and could make everything better, I would have all of the leaders from every health plan in a room together. And I'm not suggesting a universal healthcare system, but certainly this is a big challenge that we as an industry need to solve together.
Stephanie Jones is our guest. She is the CEO and founder of ITAV, It Takes a Village. And she's been talking to us today on The Mountain Life about how to navigate the Medicare system. And okay, so Stephanie, as a means to sort of wrap up, I want to ask you, what should the consumer do if they're at this point? How can we look for these solutions that are really helping us and they're meant to streamline and to help educate us and just help the whole process?
Yeah, so I always tell people that Medicare is a year-to-year business. So every year, the benefits and the pricing and the premiums change, right? So you have coverage from January to December, and then the following January, it could be different. But what you can be doing now is, you know, if you have older folks in your life that are navigating Medicare, get involved, help them, you know, read their materials. There's some great industry information on Medicare.gov. CMS.gov also has some publications. You can order publications like Medicare and You. Start reading it. You know, that's probably the best thing you can do right now is just get smart. Read the literature that is out there. Understand how you've been into that picture. And understanding is the best you can do at this point. Learn now. Do not wait until you're 64. Start the process now and start to fill those gaps. Budgeting, You know, as I said earlier, budget, make sure you meet with your financial planner, make sure you incorporate and allocate enough dollars to take care of your health care, because you're going to have the premiums, you're going to have the co-pays, you may have deductibles. And so, and depending on your income at, you know, as a working age person, depending on your income, your Medicare premiums could be higher than the average person. So just start that research now is my best advice.
That's really great advice. And I don't even know this. You probably do. You know, your mom was so lucky that she had you, a, you know, healthcare professional to help you, your mom and your dad. But I'm wondering, I'm sure that they exist out there, those advocates that you can pay to help you navigate. Is that a way that you would recommend?
Yeah, I would say you don't even have to pay for an advocate, because insurance brokers are a really good source of information. Insurance brokers, you don't have to pay. They get paid when they sell a policy, and they get paid from the insurance company. There are resources out there that are free. Each state has their state assistance programs. There's an organization called SHIP, S-H-I-P. SHIP is in every state. There are plenty of free resources that you shouldn't have to pay for an advocate. But of course, if that's something that you can afford to do and that's something you want to do, for sure, go for it. I oftentimes use my financial planner, and they tend to put me in touch with the various folks within different industries that can help me through and educate me on certain topics.
Well, Stephanie, I have to say this, it's a little bit painful to hear all of this, but it's so necessary. Mary Beth and I are going to listen to this interview over and over and over again.
Absolutely.
There's so much more to know and so much more to learn that you can't get through in 25 minutes. But I do encourage you all in your audience to just start educating yourself now.
Well, you're doing a great service for all of us out here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Mountain Life here on KPCW. If you like what you hear, leave us a comment, rate us, and be sure to subscribe to stay on top of all of our show episodes. And if you have an idea for a future episode of The Mountain Life, email us at themountainlife@kpcw.org.